Well, welcome to Limerick and welcome to a conversation that I'm just about to have with my sister. And we've done no preparation for this, Trish, have we?
No, none whatsoever.
But we have agreed that we're going to talk about 2013.
Yeah.
Do you mind if we start with you first?
No, absolutely. Yeah, fine. Yeah.
You live in Arizona. You live in Scottsdale in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You're here in Ireland at before Christmas right through to the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking on the last day of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be really curious about your 2013. Give me one word. Give me one word for your year in 2013, and then we'll go back into the detail.
Yeah.
A single word.
Not the one I want, but on hold.
On hold.
Yeah.
Right.
And so can I tell you why?
Go on.
At the beginning of this year, at the beginning of 2013, I was absolutely convinced, I thought, that by May of 2013, I'd have finished my dissertation.
My PhD dissertation.
Yeah. And that's why I say on hold. I'm a bit tired of it not being finished. It is the never-ending, now known as the damn dissertation. You know, it is just the never-ending, unfinished opus. And now it'll be finished this May. You know, well, I'll graduate this May. This one I know because I have to, because I don't have the grounds for an extension, and therefore my time limit is up, because they give you 7 years, and this is the end of my seventh year.
They only give you seven years.
Well, most people would think that's a pretty good amount of time.
I have a friend who took 13 or 14 to do a history one in the UK.
Well, some people do go extra long, and they're very lucky if they get these, and many friends of mine have gotten extensions, but I don't have frankly, I don't want an extension. Because if I thought they would give me one, I would probably seek one, and then it would be the damn dissertation for another 2 or 3 years. I will finish this when I have to, and I'm knowing that about myself now. Turns out I'm a deadline person, and that's a little bit distressing to know about myself. So I've had a little bit of self-awareness throughout the year that, damn it, whatever deadline you're going to give yourself, you're going to go all the way to the end of it. So,
and what was it like when you didn't hit that May, did you say April or May deadline?
Right, May, yeah.
What, did you have a little midlife crisis?
No, but I was more embarrassed a little bit. Christopher was married May 4th. One of the reasons they chose to get married in May was because maybe they thought they could double it up with coming to my graduation at the end of May.
You were meant to...
Yes,
you were meant to be celebrating...
Yes.
The week after your son's wedding.
Yeah. And so now luckily by about January or February, I said, lads, it's not going to happen. Don't build the wedding around my graduation. It's not going to happen. So in a way that makes you feel a little bit better internally. It takes your gut out of it. But still, it's a bit embarrassing. But I didn't. The kids are very good to me. They don't. And Jim has, God bless him, decided that pushing Tricia never brings him anything but grief. And, you know, I've been known to say to him.
So he doesn't say, go upstairs and write now.
No, he would know better than to say that.
Who says to you, go and write now?
Actually, Dr. Carter and a good friend of mine, Annalise Moser, who is lives in Dallas and is also a dissertation. She's a dissertating friend of mine, as we say, and she keeps me motivated. And then Dee, our sister, keeps me very motivated. Dee is the only person.
Of course, she finished hers in 13.
A long time. I don't know how long. I don't remember.
Yeah.
She is the only person with whom I am always completely and totally honest about where I'm at with all of this, you know, because she completely gets it. And frankly, most of my friends who are dissertating, they get it too. The least favorite words I could hear all year are, aren't you finished yet? Or are you Dr. Hoyt now? No, I am not answering that anymore. And that's what my usual response now is. I'm not answering those questions anymore. We'll talk about it when it's done. So it even gives me... I'm going to stop talking about that because it gives me a pain in my stomach, actually, to talk about that.
But I was going to think, look, did you do anything else in 2013 other than write a thesis.
Perpetually think about my writing of my thesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did.
Oh, yeah, here comes our lunch. We can pop the soup in front of us. Thank you very,
Perfect.
Very much.
Right.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Funnily enough, professionally, I did something in January or February at a conference of Catholics that usually attracts about 40,000 people, and I led a morning prayer in front of about 18,000 people and then delivered a reflection, which if I were a priest, they'd call it a homily or a sermon. But it's quite unusual for a woman to be able to do such things, and to do it in front of about 18,000 people is rather nice.
Where?
At the Anaheim Convention Center in California. There's an event called the Religious Education Congress. And every year that that event attracts Catholics from all over the United States and even from elsewhere.
And, Canada?
All over.
Mexico?
Everywhere. Poland. I mean, European countries. They send people from all over. It's a unique gathering because it's very progressive kind of Catholicism, and it's very social justice oriented. There's very good, if you can imagine, the worst worship experiences that you've ever had in your life, the most crushingly boring and dictatorial and everything else, and then imagine the polar opposite.
Would they all be supporters of the current Pope?
They most probably would, yes. So that was kind of a, professionally for me, it was rather a nice event.
Were you nervous?
Funnily enough, I mean, I always get a bit nervous, yes. But I didn't feel like I was about to short out the microphone, you know, which is, I had done it 6 years ago. And I
shorted out the microphone.
No, done the same kind of an event, led prayer and given a reflection in front of, you know, all of these thousands of people. And that 6 years ago, I had thought I was going to short out the microphone because I thought I was going to sweat so much that literally the lavalier microphone was going to be was going to electrocute me or something.
Was your reflection written down, or did you do it straight out of your heart on the?
I had prepared it out loud, which is typically how I do things. I had formulated my thoughts. I needed to make sure that my desire to be spontaneous was not undermined by any momentary flake of memory, you know, any failure of memory. So I structured it in my head very, very tightly, going from this to this to this to this to this. And then I storied it up in each of its pieces. Then I wrote it out. Then I spoke it out loud many, 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 many times to myself. And then I let it go. And then I said, now, what is? And for me, the beginning and the ending, the bookending of it is always important. You know, I knew I was going to start off with some words in Hebrew, Shema Israel, Adonai Elohino, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is your God, the Lord alone. I knew I was going to start with that, and I was going to end with that, because they happened to be part and parcel of the particular texts that I was involving with that day.
Would that have resonated with your audience, speaking in Hebrew?
Well, of course, I had to immediately follow it up with English. You have to facilitate the process. No, they would not have, but it would have been poetic, and it would have had a resonance in the sound. So that kind of thing. So that was fun. So that was a big part of my delight in the early side of the year. The other thing I want to say about this year, I suppose, two other things. One, my son's wedding, Christopher's wedding, May 4th, to Katie, whom I just adore. Absolutely a phenomenal, phenomenal young woman. A highlight of that wedding for me has a story attached to it. I didn't know they were going to do something as traditional as the mother-son dance, you know, as they often have in weddings. They have, you know, father dances with his daughter, the bride, and then mother dances with her son kind of thing. And I didn't know that, because this was a pretty untraditional wedding in many ways, so I didn't expect that there were going to be these kind of traditional moments. But the next thing...
A bit of soup while
I will,
you're talking.
Yeah. But the music goes on, and they say, now we'd like Tricia Hoyt to come to the floor with Christopher, please. And the music that comes on is Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You. Now, that song came out in about 1983, which was the year Christopher was born. And I used to sing it to him as a baby in the way that only a mother can when she knows her son doesn't know if she's tone deaf or not, right? And so I would sing this away like crazy him about the first year or so when he was a child. And then, as happens with songs, they go out of style, right? So they go. So the song went away. And probably when Christopher was about 6 or 7 years old, the song, we, you know how they replay the oldies but goodies. This, I had an oldies but goodies radio station on. Up comes Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You. And Christopher, age about 5 or 6, says to me, Mama, our song. And I'm stunned that my son remembers this song that I sang to him when he was an infant to a toddler, which I probably sang way too much, but yeah.
Wow.
Now, fast forward to the wedding day. I know, Paul. My heart, I just
did your legs go
weak
at the knees?
I bawled. People videotaped me dancing and crying like, oh my God, I can't believe you chose this song. Oh my God, this is so good. I just love you. So it was a very emotional mother-son song. I can't stand to see the photographs because I'm seeing myself in full flush of open-mouthed, teary-eyed emotion. But at the same time, it was an extraordinary moment that I thought, I cannot believe that he understands me so well to know that this would be a song I would love. So that was a pretty highlight of the moment to me.
Did you have any really difficult, hard, tough, low moments during the year?
Apart from all the low moments relating to my dissertation?
Yeah, we're not discussing the dissertation anymore.
No more.
No, we're not discussing dissertation.
Actually, one was always my heartache when you were not well. Every single day when you're not well, my heart breaks. So that was big for me. I worry always when you're not well. Other than that,
Jesus, that was an awful lot of heartbreaking days then, because that went on for probably you didn't know at the end of January.
It felt like about
8 months
altogether.
Aware until February, and it didn't end until the beginning of September.
Yeah, I remember thinking to myself, it's 8 months, that's long now. That's really long. Yeah. And my most joyous moment was when one of your friends, I think it's McCulkin, was it, made a beautiful tribute to you when you, I think it was he, made an audio boo comment about how delighted he was that your voice was back on the airwaves again. And I remember just having a joyful spring in my step that day. You know, I was happy, just delighted to hear. You know what I loved, Paul, to be dead honest now, is I loved hearing that other people love you, you know, and that I loved hearing that on the waves, so to speak. It was very cool, very, very, very cool.
Have some more soup, for goodness sake, Kevin. It'll be cold by the time you
Jim's knee surgery was a bit hard. He had a replacement knee surgery in August, and he struggles to get the need to do still what he wants.
How long was he incapacitated, by the way?
Probably about maybe 6 weeks.
With
less.
With his
No.
I can't imagine.
He's extraordinary when it comes to that. He actually has very, very good recovery from the surgery itself, and he was probably driving within, I'd say, 2 weeks, maybe three. However, he needs to get full range of motion back, and his full range of motion is probably 125 degrees or something, or 130 degrees, and he's at about 116, and he's unlikely to get that any more than that back. And it bothers me that he's in his 50s and has lost some of the range of motion of his knee. So he struggles with the long-term flexibility issues. And so that worries me, you know. I'd like if it weren't so. But heck, he's the bionic man. He has two new hips. He has one new knee. He has pins in his toes. He has
and he's getting his Achilles done.
He is. He now has problems with his Achilles tendon, which is shredding, and he has to have surgery on that in the new year for 2014.
Big part of my year this year was Achilles, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Have you been anywhere where you have had a remarkable experience or reflection during the year?
Relatively speaking, this year I haven't ventured too far. I did come to some moments of awareness around the American Midwest when we were in, well, what I call the Midwest, when we were in Missouri. When we went to Kansas City for Christopher's wedding, Christopher and Katie's wedding, we went on down to the Ozarks, which is in southern Missouri. And I found myself surrounded by what I call for myself in shorthand Americana, you know, the good old down home America, this kind of middle America values, you know, small towns, rural America. It's interesting for me. Remember, I came to the States in 1981, and I've lived almost that entire time in Arizona, which is its own cultural marvel, we might say, in all sorts of different ways. But I'm not actually exposed to tons more of the United States. I really haven't been. I've lived there and almost exclusively there all this time, really not traveled widely other than to do stuff professionally. And
to go to San Diego.
And to go to, well, to San Diego, that's right, on vacation with the family. So this opening up of what I call down home America was kind of interesting for me. It doesn't resonate with me politically, but it really resonates with me to meet people whom I would call the best of simple living. Somewhat, I'm perhaps romanticizing it. I find it's giving me cause to reflect, and I'd like to reflect on it more.
There's a book by Becky McCrae and I think his name is Dave Moltz called Small Town Winds.
Interesting.
And it actually argues, Becky lives in a very remote part of Oklahoma, lives up the panhandle with 200 people or 200 houses, but I think more likely to be 200 people. And they've written a book, and I've read only some of it. But that might be of interest to you in terms of what can people in big places learn from people in small places?
Yeah, it would be of interest to me. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I'll check that out. Yeah.
Okay, look, we have another minute and a half to go, right? So I give it to you completely freewheel. To say anything you like, which would be of interest to your grandchildren in 50 years' time?
My mum, our mother, watching her and speaking to her by phone every Sunday, almost every single Sunday, and experiencing her transition from a woman who had her thoughts together to a woman who freely admits to not having any thoughts together at all. And I've witnessed that in this whole year. Sunday by Sunday by Sunday, noticing the transition throughout our conversations from one week to the next. It's rich in many ways because she's so tranquil in it. She's completely accepting of the fact that she's losing any of her ability to be present for longer than a few minutes. So I'm learning a lot about the frailty of the human spirit and actually the tremendous strength of the human spirit. And
she looks so well.
She does. Yeah, yeah. And she's a wonderful person. I'm losing that person, but I'm finding at the same time a kind of a spirit that is there, and it's precious.
Tricia Hoyt, ex-Tricia O'Mahony, my lovely sister. Thanks a million.